2 weeks ago in committee hearing, he said they did not fund any gain-of-function research. I quoted that specific paper.
Right.
So the very paper that he puts in the email, he says, oh my goodness, we need to read this paper because we looks like we are actually funding gain-of-function research, which is where we juice up these viruses, take them from animals, and infect them into humans. He's admitting that to his underling. He's worried about this in February of last year. But only 2 weeks ago, he tells me, oh, it wasn't gain-of-function research. But in his email, in the subject line, he says, gain-of-function research. He was admitting it to his private underlings 7, 8, 9 months ago.
Well, Rand Paul was right.
Yep.
As it turns out, he was correct. 1,000% correct. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash, actually, it's Wednesday, Thursday. Feels like a Wednesday. It feels like a Monday. So, anyway, welcome back. I'm already done with the week. This day has already sucked. So, make sure you go blah, 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 danalash.com. I don't care anymore. I want to get through all the other stuff first. Because there's a lot to get in through, a lot to get into. So as you got some of the newsletter last night, there was a lot of prep in there, for you about all that stuff, just about everything that's been happening, etc., with whether it was, these emails, because now there's even more stuff coming out showing that there's, you know, clearly a big giant cover up. Massive cover up. In fact, Vanity Fair even wrote a piece, 11,000 words, on the Wuhan lab leak theory. I don't know if you guys have read the piece or not. It is pretty unbelievable. Pretty unbelievable. So, this. And I have all of this for you. We're going to get into all of this. But, I mean, when you have Vanity Fair writing, I think it's kind of, you know, it's an 11,000-word bombshell. They divvied up the all these emails, and they were looking at all of these emails, etc. And it said throughout, 2020, this notion that this thing leaked from a lab was off limits. They're right in noting all of this. I mean, they're absolutely correct in noting all of this. You couldn't talk about it. You couldn't ask a single question. You were called a conspiracy theorist, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it just is something that it's kind of silly. You couldn't ask a single question without your character entirely questioned. You guys know this. We talked about this yesterday. I'm livid over this. So sidebar, I had to do some blood work today. So I went to go get blood work this morning. And there were no mask signs off, you know, because like a year ago I had a health scare. So we're just, you know, we just do the year checkup and all that stuff. So go in, no mask signs or anything like that. And the tech was very nice. And I'm sure maybe that they had to ask this as part of their job. And, you know, I'm sure that they did. They had to ask it as part of their job. And the question, I go in, there was no signs anywhere. And she goes, Do you have a mask with you? You have a mask with you? You have a mask? Well, it was like a thing in a supermarket, even. It was like a, you know, like a little place you just go and get blood drawn. She was very nice, and I'm sure that they had to ask it as part of their job. I'm a nice person. But, you know, at the same time, it's kind of ridiculous, you know? And I just looked at her. And I'm like, and it all happens in slow motion. And all of a sudden, I have two versions of myself that appear. One with a halo and angel wings. And then the other that has the devil horn and the pitchfork and, you know, everything else. And the little angel one is saying, no, just go ahead. Just, you know what, just be like, I think I had like a crumpled one or whatever. I'm making a point to like not ever touch them again. And I had like a crumpled one, I think, somewhere. Because I responded before I actually completed my thought process. And I go, oh, I didn't know we were still doing this theater. I said it before I even, and I wasn't trying to be, it was just one of those things where my smart aleckness overpowered my discipline. And I just immediately went into it and, you know, powered into it. And I was like, we're still doing this theater, and there was no response. I'm like, I think I have like a old crumpled up one. I probably coughed in or something. I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I, I'm like, it's not going to do anything. I go, if I have it, you're already infected. Those are all things. And the angel voice was like, the angel version of me was like, I didn't even get a chance to speak. So I found one and I put the stupid theater face diaper on. I made sure to put the stupid theater face diaper on. And then went in, you know, it was fun. But it was just, it's just so stupid. It's so stupid. I just couldn't. I just can't deal with the attitude and the whole thing with it. If you're so like I go, like I'm leaving. So I'm walking out because like I didn't go in to purchase anything. And I guess there was one woman who only needed to get like one thing. And you can only leave a grocery store. Like when you're leaving the checkout lanes, and even if you're not checking out anything out and you just go through there, there's really like there's one exit. You know what I mean? It's kind of bottleneck. They do that for security purposes. There's one exit. And going through this thing, I wasn't even near this one. I'm just trying to get to my car, okay? Because I had a conference call to do. Your girl's got work, okay? Your girl doesn't get to sit around on her ass and jack around until 11 o'clock and not do. I mean, I got work. If I'm like out of pocket from 9 to 5. I'm just, you can't talk to me. And I'm like trying to get back. I mean, I get the first earliest thing ever I can always get. And I'm just trying to get back and do me, okay? So I'm putting my glasses on and my sunglasses on and I'm just like heading out to my car. And this woman was in front, and I wasn't like riding. You know how when you're walking and you can like ride up on somebody when you're walking? And it wasn't like I was trying to run her down or trip her or anything. I just was going to my car. I wasn't even aware of her until she stopped and turned around and I noticed she had two masks on. Two. And she stopped like I was like in her space. Stopped and kind of turned around, was like, and I was too busy. I'm just like, Karen, bye. I've got to go. Like, we are both leaving through the same door, okay? There's no reason why we shouldn't be leaving through the same door. No reason why I should be waiting. But that was the only thing. I think people are conditioned. They're conditioned to all this stuff. And I blame this dude. I blame this dude. I blame this dude for this. This is so ridiculous. I blame this guy. If he doesn't want to be suspected of being an agent of a communist state, then he needs to not act like an agent of a communist state. So he started doing press yesterday. Why, for the ever love of anything, why would you start doing press? Well, let's see. I mean, he's the guy who was like, oh, I'm really, really, you know, I'm really surprised by all of the media attention. You court it. Dude, you court it. You court the media attention. And so the other thing that's really with all of this, because the emails about the masks and the emails about whether or not it was a lab leak, he was really doing everything he could to downplay any suspicion of it leaking from the lab. Vanity Fair's like, dude, come on. Come on. Just a second. Really? I mean, it's what gets me is Audio Soundbite 4. Mark Meadows made a really, really, really good point with this, because Fauci didn't share any of his concerns or anything with anybody that was on the coronavirus task force. Listen.
Part of the troubling thing that we're seeing with these emails that are coming out is not only do they seem to correspond with what President Trump said and what Secretary Pompeo said in terms of the origins of the virus, but it indicates that Dr. Fauci had knowledge or at least the suspicion of things not happening in an evolutionary manner very early on. And he didn't share that with the task force. That's very troubling and something that we do need to get to the bottom of.
Yeah. And we do need to get to the bottom of it. I mean, he's correct in that. Here's the other thing. He didn't tell the task force. Meanwhile, do you know somebody else on the task force was having some problems? Did you guys hear this? The story about Redfield. Did you hear this? I didn't know this. I learned this from the Vanity Fair piece. I'm going to pull up the appropriate section of it. Because it said that Robert Redfield received death threats from fellow scientists after telling CNN that he believed the coronavirus had originated in a lab. This was in March. Yeah. Vanity Fair piece.
The whole idea about science is that you question people's hypotheses. Like, that's how science works.
Yeah.
Not death threats.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Vanity Fair piece says that for, and this is last March, for most of the past year, the lab leak scenario was treated not simply as unlikely or even inaccurate, but as morally out of bounds. In late March, former Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield received death threats from fellow scientists after telling CNN that he believed COVID-19 had originated in a lab. He said, "I was threatened and ostracized because I proposed another hypothesis," Redfield told Vanity Fair. I expected it from politicians. I didn't expect it from science, because it's not about science. That is unconscionable. I want to know who those scientists are. Yeah. Tar and feather. I want to know who they are. Their careers should be ruined. This is when it's not cancel culture, it's a reckoning. That's inexcusable. Holy cow. Yeah, nobody, did y'all know that? Here you have Fauci, who was emailing back and forth about, yeah, it could have been a lab leak. I mean, you know, Redfield, who was saying it and getting death threats from fellow scientists. Unbelievable. I mean, all this theater, there are real serious consequences. People were arrested over the rules and regulations that came about because of the non-science of all of this. They were arrested. People were attacked if they didn't wear masks. The Federalist has a piece titled, "If you don't think mask rules threaten freedom, watch this grandma arrested for not masking." And she was sitting by herself in a school auditorium, and she was entirely unmasked. And they arrested her on camera. They arrested her on camera. It's unbelievable. I have a lot more for you today. We've got a ton of stuff that we're going to get into, and you don't want to miss a single bit of it. And as well, we've got an exclusive, because we're going to be speaking with, normally I don't do like campaign announcements. I don't let people electioneer on the show. I'm real strict about it. But I really like this story, and it's a well-known name who is announcing their intent to run for office today for congressional office out of Texas. And we're going to talk to this individual, because I thought it was hysterical when I did like a pre-talk with them. And I'm like, "So why are you doing this?" And they're like, "Well, I don't want to." I'm like, "Okay." So it was just funny. We're going to talk to them though. Them. We're talking to them. That's what I said. I didn't say her or him. You don't know yet. Ladies, you don't need a reason to buy something nice for yourself, but let's pretend that you do. Your hardworking loungewear is ready for replacement. Thank them for their service, pack them away, and order yourself a few new sets of new Tommy John loungewear. From second skin joggers to the softest tops, it's time to welcome a new season of comfort this spring. When you start every morning in Tommy John loungewear, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. Tommy John loungewear and pajamas are guaranteed to fit perfectly with comfy, non-pilling, micromodal fabric, which means no lint balls or fuzz. It's the same level of comfort and innovation that goes into everything Tommy John makes, including the bras with no slip straps, twice the adjustability of competing brands, and the softest second skin fabric for the perfect fit. Returns and exchanges are free, and right now you'll get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Dana. Get 20% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Dana. TommyJohn.com/Dana. See site for details.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook. And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
I just got a really dumb soundbite that I can't wait to share with you guys, by the way. I'm gonna let you guess. FDA says to avoid eating cicadas if you're allergic to seafood. Why does this need to... Who's eating these things? Who's eating them? This is so gross. Yeah, they actually are warning people. So wait a minute, are they... So like if you're allergic to shellfish, you would have the similar allergic reaction to cicadas? That is gross. That's so gross. I called this also, by the way, years ago. So George P. Bush, he went and became Texas Land Commissioner, right? If you're going to go up in politics anywhere, you got to start as Texas Land Commissioner. And I said, watch it. He's going to go for like AG and then he'll go for governor. Oh, well, guess what? I told you, George P. Bush announced the GOP primary challenge to Attorney General Ken Paxton, who's going to be on the show with us later today, by the way. They're both vying for the endorsement of Trump as well. So this is going to be very interesting. We should get him on because he announced yesterday he's running for Texas AG. This is going to be a battle. Oh boy, I'm here for the comments. I'm just going to pop some popcorn and I'm here to watch the comments because, oh my goodness, we'll watch that. It's crazy how the media says that, you know, that Trump was a tyrant, and they always talk about the sanctity of the free press. But yet journalist Andy Ngo was brutally attacked again in Portland. He was covering another destructive riot from Antifa up there. Those are the white socialist trust fund kids. And when he was in Portland, he was viciously attacked again. We'll go through some of the, because he actually wrote about it. Nothing from the press. Nothing from the Fourth Estate about this at all whatsoever. Twitter is releasing, you can pay to be abused on Twitter now. They're launching their first subscription service. Now, as someone who's had about a million followers deleted in the past 9 months, we're at 1,000, a little over 1,000 a day, and I've screenshotted all of it, so don't try. And they're not all bots. Would you pay to be abused? Do you love being told that you're a gun whore? Do you love being told that you're a Hitler or a Nazi because you just simply disagree with someone about tax policy? Well, now you can pay for the abuse. Twitter, they're not giving you an edit button, but they said that they are launching a subscription service with a monthly fee with exclusive features. Canada, Australia get the service first, respectively, $3.49 and $4.49 in local currencies per month. We're not sure when Twitter Blue is going to be available in the United States, but let's hope never. And Joe Biden is set to meet with Queen Elizabeth on his first overseas trip coming up. And coming up, the DOJ investigating a firm linked to Hunter Biden. We got more on the cover-up, too.
The Biden administration is blocking lawmakers from getting to the truth at the border, and the Chinese have very disturbing ambitions in space. I'm Sarah Carter on the... I'll dig into these issues and a whole lot more with Texas Congressman Brian Babin, and I'll also discuss the left suddenly admitting that the COVID lab leak theory is worth investigating. Join me. Subscribe to The Sarah Carter Show at Spotify, iHeart, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Want a deeper dive into The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana Lash's chapter and verse newsletter by visiting danalash.com and clicking on the subscribe tab. Don't worry, your info is safe with her.
If we want to reduce violent crime, if we want to reduce the number of people in our jails, the answer is to stop building more of them. The answer is to make sure that we actually build more hospitals. We pay organizers. We get people mental health care and overall health care, employment, etc. It's to support communities, not throw them away.
So, I mean, we all know that this makes all the sense in the world, because the problem... And welcome back to the show, the very serious radio program that we're doing across the country. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. I'm in kind of a sour mood. It's okay. I'm actually not really, but I just feel like it. I'm in a good mood, but I'm pretending I'm not. Danalash.com. Go and subscribe to the newsletter, chapter and verse. This, she's right. If we had fewer jails, we would have less crime, because we know that the existence of jails, I mean, literally creates crime out of the ether. You can take a completely peaceful area that has no jail cane, and you can build in it a jail, put a jail in it in the town, and all of a sudden criminals pop up.
Wow.
It's like one of the zombie maps for Black Ops. When you go into a certain area and then the zombies like spring up out of the ground, right? Or if you start an objective, I'm just saying... That's like what it is when you build a jail. If you build it, they will come. Not a lot of people realize that what was it, Field of Dreams baseball something? I don't know.
Yes.
That was actually built. It was based on the science of building jails, but they just changed it to baseball. Did you know that?
I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if they had done the actual truth of the story, which was, you know, if you build a jail, criminals come. They're just attracted to jail. That's how criminals work. They're attracted to jails. That's why they spend so much time not evading them, getting caught and having to go there. You didn't know this, did you?
No.
Yeah. Cain, you know what? It wasn't...
10 years old.
I know. That was the other story that was left out of the Bible, was that there wasn't any crime or anything until there was a jail that was built in Cain and Abel's time. You know why there was the first murder with Cain and Abel?
Yeah.
Because somebody built a jail.
I had no idea.
You didn't know that, did you? Facts. F-A-C-K-S. Facts.
The new English version or the King James version?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
It's like the new interpretation, yeah,
the
whatever.
NIV, the NIV. But
yeah. It's that. You guys didn't know that, did you? She's getting slammed, by the way, because she had tweeted that her grandmother, her home, well, her home was destroyed in the hurricane, and she said that she had went to Puerto Rico for the first time in a year because of coronavirus, which, you know, I get. I mean, travel was difficult. And she was like, I can't believe that the government hasn't helped her. And then she like went off on this rant on Trump. And it's like, okay, we get it. You dislike Trump. I'm so tired of hearing people talk about how much they don't like him. We get it. Oh my gosh. You're like the ex that never stops talking about their ex. Stop. It's so annoying. Can't stand him. Oh my gosh. So bad. And she tweets this photo of her grandmother's house. And then she's like complaining that the government doesn't do anything. Girlfriend, you've got two swanky apartments in some of the most expensive areas in the United States of America. Doesn't she live in like Foggy Bottom in D.C.? Where, isn't that where she lives, Steve? Didn't you say that she lived in this bougie apartment building there in D.C.? Like brand new? Okay, whatever. Same difference. It's like, what, three blocks away from Foggy Bottom. But she has got a real nice apartment building, real nice apartment in D.C. She got a real nice pad in New York. She drives like one of the most expensive Teslas you can get. She shops at Whole Foods, you know that, whole paycheck. So, why aren't you sending money down to your grandmother? This is the trust fund socialist mentality. These people will not put skin in the game. They want you to do it. They won't do it. They want you to do it. They expect everybody else to do their stuff. Where I come from, if my grandparents' house needed work and I had the means to help and I didn't help and I was sitting here blasting it, on, you know, publicly and blaming everyone else for not doing what I was unwilling to do, I would be shamed out of sight. I would be shamed out of sight. I'd be too ashamed to post something like that because it's proof that I didn't help take care of my own. I didn't help take care of my family. That's just not how we live where I come from. But that's the socialist mentality. That's the problem that I always have with the socialist mentality is because they think everybody else is responsible for doing it. Oh, man. And I still don't know. And she was like, well, I was trying to make a bigger picture. No, you weren't. You were making it about you. Everything this girl does, she always brings it back to herself. Every time. Anyway. So, a few other things to... I got a lot of other things to touch on here. I didn't even finish going through everything with our first segment. So, the Democrat agenda is having a little bit of problems. So yesterday it came down, the Senate parliamentarian kind of wrecked their agenda. I won't get into the weeds with all of it. They have very slim majorities in Congress and in both houses of Congress. And you have Senate parliamentarian Elizabeth McDonough. Man, what a Scottish name. She's also a Democrat. But Red State goes, she ripped the heart out of the Democrat agenda. Ooh. I mean, that's not really an exaggeration. The Democrats, they had a chance a little bit ago in the form of this ruling. Do you remember we mentioned this and we were waiting to see what it was? It was a parliamentarian ruling that Chuck Schumer hoped was going to just give a pass to the rest of the Biden agenda. And he was very confident, but not everybody else was confident about it. And so he said that, oh, yeah, the Senate parliamentarian just is going to let him do whatever that he wants to do. He's free reign, although that was actually never expressed publicly. So now what the parliamentarian has said is, well, no, they're not going to be able to do what they wanted to do, and they can't force things through on a simple 50-50 vote. Now, this gets into reconciliation and the Byrd rule. And that means, and this is citing this piece, requires that anything that is included in the reconciliation bill must deal with taxes and budgetary issues. You also have stipulations about deficit offsets. That has to be taken into consideration. But you cannot take regular, everyday legislative items and pass this off as through the reconciliation process and act like it meets the litmus test of having to do with taxes and budget. Now, H.R. 1, which is the voting thing that's going to completely redo voting, and the PRO Act and a lot of the infrastructure bill, with, if you are not able to force that through with reconciliation, then Democrats are out, they have zero options. They, I mean, they're going to, I don't see how there's just no way they're going to get that through. And you know what? One of the problems is that the infrastructure bill, so much of it was pork. Remember, we went over it with a fine-tooth comb, and I posted about it online. A lot of it had to do, so much of it had nothing to do with actual infrastructure. And that was why there were a lot of people, even Democrat analysts, that were saying, I don't really see how this is going to be passed through in reconciliation, through that process, because it is, even though they're saying that it's like an infrastructure bill, and it and they're trying to act like it's a budget issue, so much of it is pork and items that would be described as like day-to-day legislation. There's no way that that process isn't possible. But I think that honestly Schumer thought that McDonough, because she is a Democrat, not going to happen. Though kudos to her for sticking to the rule on that. I appreciate that. See, people like that, like, maintain, if there are, you had more Democrats that actually recognize the rules, they might not have to struggle so damn hard to get support. Kudos to her for sticking to the rules on that. And so, I just don't, Nancy Pelosi's really mad. And she'll take it out somehow in Congress. She'll have some kind of press conference. I don't know. She's mad, though. But here's the thing. So this means H.R. 1 is DOA. And that was the voting bill that we talked about and said that was one of the most dangerous pieces of legislation in the past 20 years, if not, you know, and maybe in the past 50 even. Well, I don't know, because the gun control thing was pretty bad. Brady Act and all that. It's hugely bad. Massively, hugely bad. So, and the PRO Act was in that as well. And we've talked about the PRO Act. That's basically the government saying that you can no longer have contracted, like, work-at-home employees. Everybody has to be on payroll. So you are not able to hire out independent contractors. It kills the independent contractor industry. And that's a significant number of people, of workers, and also considering the number of startups and small businesses. I would prefer, actually, to work as an independent contractor. In fact, I try to set it up as much as possible, which is why I'm always like quarterly with taxes. So on certain days when I'm ragey for no reason, like the sun's out and everybody's given a pot of gold and I'm mad, it's because I had to write a check to the Treasury. Right. You'll know it. You think leg day's bad. Jeez. Y'all don't even know how bad that day is. This is like 50 leg days. But here's the problem. You know there's always going to be a wrinkle in this. Don't get all excited about this getting defeated, you know, because they Democrats got too confident. You know that you're going to have some Republicans out there who are going to go, "Huh, how can I get past what I want passed later? Maybe if I offer to give some help to some Democrats on this measure or this measure, then they'll turn around and help me." No. And if the GOP does any of that, if they don't stand firm and if they start caving, what's the point of having you people in office? I'd rather, no, get out of office. I'd rather not have a single one of you in there. So this is going to be very interesting to watch, because, I mean, I really don't know what, I don't know what else they're going to be able to do at this point. And they're already mad right now. Oh my gosh, they're so mad over Kristen Sinema, you guys. Oh my gosh, Kristen Sinema was defending the filibuster. Something that actual, and this is Audio Soundbite 9, so this is something that Democrats used to also say until they didn't have to say it anymore. Listen to her defend it in an appearance with a Republican senator.
Well, as folks in Arizona know, I've long been a supporter of the filibuster because it is a tool that protects the democracy of our nation. Rather than allowing our country to ricochet wildly every 2 to 4 years back and forth between policies.
This is not news.
Good for her. But the left is mad. They are raging against her. Raging. The Hill had a piece, and they were talking about, they quoted everybody. Everybody from Obama's former aide, Dan Pfeiffer, MSNBC Joy Reid, who I have no idea why she's like the female Sharpton in terms of train of thought. The stuff she says is so kooky sometimes. Yeah, I mean, there were a number. I mean, the left lost their mind yesterday just trashing her. Her and Manchin. Because, see, there's no room for moderation in the Democrat side anymore. They're moderate Democrats. They're Democrats. They caucus with Democrats. They vote more with Democrats than anybody. But they're not crazy. They're not Marxists. Manchin, he's more of a Kennedy Democrat, which is a little bit of like a Tocqueville Democrat, maybe a classical liberal. Sinema's definitely more of a classical liberal. But there's still some things, obviously, we disagree on, because they still, to an effect, believe that the state is the source of all help and whatever, the final arbiter. But they're not progressive. Progressive now anymore, to me, is synonymous with hateful. They're not progressive and they're not Marxist. So, interesting, interesting. We got a lot of stuff, including, remember how the left loved cancel culture? And then the tables got turned on them, whether or not you agree with the principle or not. I'll share that story with you. It happened at Stanford. We'll also get into a little bit with the economy, because Wall Street Journal has a great piece out. Yes, it's still the economy, stupid, quoting that famous line from James Carville. As the pandemic wanes, one thing that all the surveys being taken are showing is that the economy is still tops. And guess what? When you have Biden pushing World War II levels of debt, there's no offset spending. You have some of the lowest unemployment that you've seen after having record high employment numbers in the last 4 years. The alarms are sounding in the Democrat headquarters, because 2022 is looking more and more like the apocalypse for that party.
It's the Dana Show.
So, DanaLash.com. So I was reading, I came on this article and I'm just dying at the discussion that we are having. The headline is from the Washington Post. And during the pandemic, I don't know, whatever, people made some very questionable buying decisions. And the headline over at WAPO is, love them or hate them, Crocs are back. Sales have surged during the pandemic and the brand's signature foam clog is churning up everywhere. Says someone, they literally quote this person, I would wear them to the Met Gala.
Oh my God.
I mean, what? Like, they're like $70 lavender Crocs. So they're like, I didn't know all this happened. Like, they apparently, there was a recent collab with Justin Bieber, $70 lavender Crocs.
70?
Adorned with chipmunk and teddy bear charms. They sold out. Crocs also partnered with Balenciaga on an $850 platform clog. What? KFC, apparently now, there's a Hidden Valley Ranch themed shoe that has French fries, veggie sticks, and pizza studded on it. It's sold out in pre-sales. I can't even deal with this. What is happening to people? What is happening? But even more so, have you ever heard of the Jibbitz thing? This is what I'm... $5 for one of these things. They're like these... they're like little plastic charms that are shaped like everything from like cheese boards to Winnie the Pooh. I don't know. And you can snap them on your... Somebody invented Jibbitz and made themselves a frillionaire. Yep. Why didn't I do that? Sherry Schmelzer. She's from Boulder, Colorado. She invented Jibbitz. And she's like a frillionaire. They said that every month, what is it? They sell $2 million worth of Jibbitz. Every month, these things retail without tax or before tax, $249 a piece.
What?
Yeah. Juan, who is working with us now, he's been with us now long enough that we can talk about him. He was like, Crocs never left. Like, what? Oh my gosh. But I just can't even believe, like, this woman invented this. Like, she was like, these holes with that Crocs that we could put charms in them. And she's a frillionaire. Millions of dollars a month for something that retails for $2.49. $2.49. How many of you people are buying Crocs and putting the little Jibbitz charms in the Crocs?
It's the new NFT.
Kane was like, God bless capitalism. Yes, and why also did I not think of that? Somebody invent a shoe that I can make a charm for.
I don't remember what's in that redacted, but the idea, I think, is quite far-fetched. that the Chinese deliberately engineered something so that they could kill themselves as well as other people? I think that's a bit far out, John.
I know I'm not an epidemiologist, but hi, have you heard of communism? Welcome back. Oh, man, now we're kooky. Welcome back to the show. We got a protein boost and maybe some natural fruit sugars. You're like, what? We have protein bowls. That's what they were. Right. Welcome to the show. Welcome back. Dana Lash, danalash.com. Oh, man. I'm sidebar, because I got to talk about this. My mom sent me this link to this dude who does this. I can't play it on air because he is hysterical. I literally was laughing my head off. And he's like, people who are from St. Louis, you all can't talk. And he's like, there's a whole bunch of words that y'all can't pronounce. And I'm like, that's not true. And then he's like, say brewery. And I'm like, brewery. He's like, that's wrong. Say it, Kane, because I cannot do it.
It's brewery.
You're only saying that because you live in Illinois. You lived in Illinois for a bit.
I was born in St. Louis. All my work was in St. I never worked in the state of Illinois. I only lived there.
For a little bit, and that apparently unclicked something in your mind that allowed you to say brewery.
Or
that sounds dumb.
Or broadcast training.
It's like there's an extra roux in there.
Right. I over enunciate everything because of my training, but you're right. See, he was accurate with those words that St. Louisans cannot pronounce.
He was so, my card just got pulled. I'm like, I'm being called to account. And I always thought, I mean, I have good pronunciation, although sometimes I talk fast because I do. But I'm like, brewery. That's the way you say it.
You come honest by it.
Brewery.
I mean, that's how you grew up.
Right? Like how people in Texas, they know how to say nuclear, but they just say nuclear. That's just because that's how they say it in Texas. You know, they know it's nuclear. And if pressed upon, they'll say it like that. But, you know, usually it's nuclear, right? There's just certain words that people say, like Southern Missouri, we say warsh. Don't even. Pillow. Like when I started doing my pillow ads, I had to actually say it in a stupid way. Because that's how you say.
You say it in the right way, not the stupid
way. What was the other one that I thought was so stupid?
Oil? Like,
no, milk.
Oh, milk, that's right.
Milk. Gotta guys say it like babies. Milk. Those are the only words that I say where a little bit of the Southern Missouri accent, I think, comes out. But Warsh is never going to change. I know there's not an R in it, but I feel like I'm faking like a Boston accent if I say Wash. It sounds so stupid. People talk like that. Like they go, I'm going to go wash my clothes. I just don't understand it. I just don't. Anyway, long story short, I am fascinated by this video. There's a language warning. I tweeted it. So don't be like turning it up in your cubicle because everybody will be prairie dogging, looking who's playing the repeated F-bombs. But it is hysterical. And it is 1,000%. This dude is more accurate than Fauci. Yeah. There's that segue. That's why they pay me the big bucks, folks. Magnificent segue. DanaLash.com. Subscribe to Chapter and Verse, the newsletter. All right. So this, I feel like the guy's never heard of communism because he's like, why, could you believe that China would endanger its own people? You mean, have you ever watched, do you heard of Tiananmen Square? Has he heard of Tiananmen Square? Did he not see like what China does to people who dissent with Xi Jinping? Did he not watch and see what happened when people from China and Hong Kong made fun of Xi Jinping using Winnie the Pooh memes? They banned Winnie the Pooh. And then they banned Mickey Mouse and they banned South Park. Yeah. My goal in life is to be banned by China. Yeah. Nothing would make me happier. Yeah. Ban me. Out of all the places where I, you know, want to be banned, that's the place. But no. I guess I'm not, I don't know, maybe I should be louder or pushier, I don't know. But apparently he's never, that was the most insane question. Was that the one that he was talking with Nicole Wallace? Or was it with that other dude who I don't know who
I think
it is?
It was John, some,
John
I think at the end, yeah.
Such and Such?
Yeah.
Mr. Such and Such's son? That person?
Yes,
yeah.
That guy.
Yeah, that guy. There was no follow-up, like, I would have made it awkward. Yeah, I mean, you honestly think that China would endanger their own people? Yeah. Yeah, I do. You don't? Like I said, if the guy wants to dispel myths that he's some sort of agent of the Chinese state, this is not the way you do it. of the Communist Party of China. Not the way you do it. Not at all. It's pretty far out there. Is it, though? Because in the emails, that's, you know, they were even saying that this could have been, there's stuff in here that does not look like it occurred in natural evolution, right? And then audio soundbite 20. So he was not going to go criticize China for refusing to cooperate. Now, before I play this, keep in mind, China demanded that the World Health Organization exclude Taiwan from the initial, actually all, meetings of world nations to discuss how to best react to and contain and mitigate all the effects, etc., of the coronavirus, and share strategies that worked for them. They demanded that Taiwan be excluded, and WHO said, okay. They demanded that. They demanded that WHO change the name, stop calling it the Wuhan coronavirus, and call it COVID-19, because everything else is coronavirus. But no, we'll just call it COVID-19 so that we can stop this racist insinuation that it came from Wuhan. And the World Health Organization said, okay. And then China, when they were criticized for not doing enough to contain it in their country, said any accusation of what they were doing was racist. And then the World Health Organization, okay, Dr. Tedros, okay. So keep that in mind when you listen to Fauci, who will not criticize China here. Audio somebody 20.
You know, there are several reasons, Willie, why it's difficult. I think one of the things is that we need better access to all the information. I mean, it's obviously in China's interest to find out exactly what it is. And the is of the natural theory would be to find that link. So you have to keep looking for it. I mean, obviously you want openness and cooperation. One of the ways you can get it is don't be accusatory. Try to get both a forensic, a scientific, and an investigational approach. I think the accusatory part about it is only going to get them to pull back even more.
Even more than they already have? I mean, I don't think they should be accusatory. It's not being accusatory, it's being observant. There's a major difference. Well, I don't think they should. Nobody asked you what you thought. You're getting in foreign policy territory, dude, which is not your, that's not where you should be. You're an epidemiologist. That's where you are. You stay and you talk about germs and viruses. That's what you do. Don't start dabbling in foreign policy. This is observant. This isn't accusatory. Good heavens. I mean, good heavens. Now, he was also asked, and this is what I was, oh, man. He was asked, this is audio soundbite 21. Remember, one of the emails that he had, and did you all, I know I put this in the newsletter last night. I had it in the newsletter last night. Remember, one of the emails that he had read such, he wrote this, he was responding to this woman named Sylvia. I'll read this sentence here. Quote, masks are really for infected people to prevent them from spreading infection to people who are not infected rather than protecting uninfected people from acquiring infection. The typical mask you buy in the drugstore is not really effective in keeping out the virus, which is small enough to pass through the material, end quote. February 5th, 2020, 3:48 p.m. Eastern Time. Science. I mean, they literally say on the box, it's not going to work against the viruses. You might as well go ahead and cover yourselves in crystal. It's not going to work, right? Not going to work. It's not going to work against viruses. I mean, there were a lot of studies and a lot of scientists that came out to express that, but they were quickly told that that wasn't the proper thing to say. That is no thought. And you are not allowed to have no thoughts. But this is what he answered. He was asked about those masks. Listen to this. This is 21.
There was an email from you to Sylvia Burwell, the former HHS secretary, that had to do with masks. And this is getting a great deal of attention. And the date here is February 5th, which I think is hugely important. She apparently had asked you whether she should wear a mask on a trip. And you responded to her concluding, I do not recommend that you wear a mask, particularly since you are going to a very low risk location. That was February 5th. Right. A lot has transpired right since then. If you had to go back and do it all over again, would you tell her something different? Do you regret that? Yeah.
Well, you know, John, let's get real here. If you look at scientific information as it accumulates, what is going on in January and February, what you know as a fact, as data, guides what you tell people and your policies. If March, April, May occur, you accumulate a lot more information and you modify and adjust your opinion and your recommendation based on the current science and current data.
But we already had all of that data. Nothing about this virus made its particles more specialer than the other virus particles. Are they still the same size as other virus particles? Well, yes. Do they still spread the same way as other virus particles? Yes. And the other virus particles can go through masks? Yes. So these virus particles, being completely identical in shape and behavior to other virus particles, will also go through masks. Yes. Well, I mean, wait, no. And with more information, modify, blah, blah, blah. People wore face diapers and they were told it was a measure of, it's like, okay, so the scene from Office Space when Jennifer Aniston works at what's basically TGI Fridays and they have to wear pieces of flair, which is like buttons on their aprons and all of that. And however many pieces of flair that you have, what was the required number? It was like five pieces,
like 12 or 10, yeah. Whatever.
Small. And he was like, so-and-so is wearing 25 pieces of flair. She was like, well, because she wouldn't do it. It's like a measure of excitement. And all the brown nosers were wearing like tons of buttons. They were like covered in buttons, much like North Korea's fake generals are covered in medals. And so they treat those like flair too. And so they act like the masks are pieces of flair. However many masks you wear is a measure of your patriotism. 6 feet of masks at all times. I mean, two masks. Why stop at two masks? Two things that this particle will go right through. What about three? What about four? And it just keeps multiplying. Five, six, seven. And then all of a sudden the Sesame Street count comes up. 12 masks. Aw. It's got crazy. I don't know how all these people are involved now, including puppets. But you get my point, right? It's not based on science. It was based on what?
Politics.
I mean, what did they actually think that was going to be a good crowd control measure? Did they? I get it that we Americans have grown lazy and complacent and a little bit, we take for granted our freedoms to the point where we've allowed a lot of stuff to slide. But make no mistake, these are people that threw a bunch of tea in a harbor and literally hid in the bushes and picked off British soldiers in Boston. Just saying. The committees of correspondence, they would get in and meet in taverns and plot How to leave the Empire of Britain over brewery. Now more than ever, it's vital to support companies and organizations that share your values. And Patriot Mobile is calling all patriots. Switch to Patriot Mobile today. Bring your own phone and you'll get 50% off your first 2 months plus a free Patriot starter kit. And for a limited time, enter the Be a Patriot promotion to win a free phone and cellular service for life. Simply donate to one of Patriot Mobile's participating charities. Send in your thoughts on what it means to be a patriot or switch your service to a Patriot Mobile plan. With the broadest nationwide coverage, Patriot Mobile has plans to fit any budget and great multi-line discounts. Switching is easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call their U.S.-based customer service team at 972-PATRIOT. That's 972-PATRIOT. Veterans and first responders save even more, so make the switch today. Get the discount, free starter kit, and enter the Be a Patriot promotion for a chance to win using the offer code DANA. A full list of rules is available at patriotmobile.com/Dana. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT.
Check out all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on official Dana Lash on Facebook, youtube.com/The Dana Show, or channel 244 on Pluto TV. And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
Well, I guess it's official. It's over now. Axios has ended its weekly map of coronavirus cases. They say that America's case counts are so low now and the virus is so well contained. This is our final weekly map. There you go. And also, Babylon Bee CEO Seth Dillon has announced that they're taking legal action against the New York Times for the defamatory article. We talked to them about this just a few weeks ago. The Babylon Bee, which is the satirical, hysterical site, they were actually smeared by the New York Times that was trying to, they didn't recognize irony. They didn't recognize satire. And they kept saying that they are far-right misinformation sites, and yet they only cited Babylon Bee as such. And so Seth Dillon says their publishing of deceptive disinformation for the purpose of leading people to falsely believe that we're the source of it. Yeah, they said that's pretty defamatory. So they're going to go to court over that, and we'll watch that as well. I mentioned this yesterday, but I didn't even actually get to finish it. But this is a very important story to me, knowing my past history with Lil Debbie. In Missouri, in Poplar Bluff, for the second time, a duo of bandits have broken into a locked storage unit and stolen tons of Lil Debbie snack cakes. The police want the public's assistance to solve the case. They said apparently there's a thriving, like, black snack cake market. I can't even talk. Instead of drugs, it's zebra cakes. I don't know. First theft was on New Year's Day. And then they took lots of stuff. Bag donuts, strawberry shortcakes, zebra cake rolls, Suzy Q's, unicorn cakes. Oh, my gosh. The birthday cakes. No ho-hos? Ain't nobody taking no ho-hos from Lil Debbie? I'm just curious. Anyway, the police need the public's help. And China hacked. They failed in hacking to get control of New York's subway system. But their ransomware attack did cripple Martha's Vineyard Ferry. Up next, Morgan Littrell.
Listen to The Dana Show on your Alexa by opening the app settings and linking your podcast service to your Alexa. And then say, Alexa, play The Dana Show podcast.
I love this song. And it's appropriate. DanaLash.com. A lot of discussion about what's going to happen in 2022. What's going to happen with Congress? And what's Congress going to look like? Because right now we got a Democrat majority. And the Democrat majority is very, very, very slim. Very slim Democrat majority. And as I was saying earlier, in looking at a lot of the surveys that are coming out, there's a very interesting piece over at Wall Street Journal that gets into, now that the pandemic is waning, it's still about the economy. It's still about the economy. And as a result, the sirens are going off in DNC HQ. Because whenever you talk about the economy, voters know you can't lie to them about what's happening with their pocketbook. You can't lie to them about what's happening with their bank accounts, what's happening with stocks, what's happening with the price of groceries, what's happening with the price of fuel. You can't lie to them about tensions regarding foreign policy. With new media, people see everything. They go to the store, they buy stuff, they know how much stuff costs. Very interesting piece. And Democrats are going to be in a world of pain if this is not remedied. And honestly, it doesn't look like it's going to be remedied. We got World War II debt levels, no offset spending, nothing to show for it, nothing on actual infrastructure. 2022 is going to be pretty unbelievable. With that said, one of those races is in Texas. One of the races that people are going to be watching is what's going to be happening in Texas's 8th congressional district. Now, you have an outgoing Republican, Kevin Brady. He's not going to seek re-election in 2022. So who is going to run? Let's see who's in this area. This is, you know, it's a significant area, part of Montgomery County, Walker County, Harris County, a lot of outlying areas of Metro Houston. And it just so happens that our guest here, who announced his intention to run today, well, he's born and raised there, fifth generation Texan, and an all around good guy, family man, an American hero, Morgan Littrell. Everybody knows Morgan Littrell, and he joins us by phone now. Fifth generation Texan, raised on a horse ranch. And I tell you, Morgan, first off, it's good to talk with you. We've spoken before, and nobody is better to represent an area than a hometown son who knows the area, grew up in the area, their family grew up in the area, their family's family grew up in the area. This is your backyard and then some. Welcome to the show. And you've announced your intention to run for 8th Congressional District today.
I did, yes, ma'am. Thanks for having me on the show. This is an exciting time.
Very exciting time. The thing that I And I've told people before, I don't normally do campaign anything, really. I mean, but one of the reasons why I am so, I think that your race represents a larger story. I think that your announcing that you're going to run represents a bigger theme here. And because you don't really want to. And I always think that the person who doesn't really want to and is doing it begrudgingly because they know that there's a job that's got to get done, and they know that no one else is going to really be able to do it adequately, and they just want a good job done so that they can go back and live their life. That's the type of person that you want to be running and to be in the seat. And that's kind of your mentality. Yeah, that's like where you're coming from. You're like, well, I guess if nobody else can, then I'm going to have to do it and just roll up the shirt sleeves.
It was time, and I feel compelled, and it's a necessity, especially being a hometown boy. And when Tarson Brady decided to retire, which was such an amazing man, my family and friends in the district and here where we grew up, I started getting phone calls. And again, it was one of the more challenging decisions I had made, but my family and I chatted about it an extended period of time, and we prayed on it. And inevitably, I'm running for Congress for the exact same reason I served in the military, and that's to serve my country, you know, to protect and support the Constitution of the United States, and I'm all in.
Yeah, absolutely. For those who want to know more about Morgan's background, obviously you have a brother who's your identical twin, Marcus. And
I do. My younger brother.
Younger brother. I'm going to make note of that to always your little baby, sweet little baby brother. I'll just put
That's
it like
right.
that. But Morgan Luttrell, for those who don't know, he got his bachelor's in psychology. You served multiple deployments in combat, naval special warfare officer. You were also in a helicopter crash in 2009. And you had really a huge, huge hurdle that you had to get over. Tell us a little bit about that. How do you think that this prepared you? Because this is obviously a different kind of fire. It's like, I don't know which one's the frying pan and which one's the fire sometimes. But tell us a little bit about that and how that's kind of set your perspective on dealing with this kind of stuff, like with the craziness that we're seeing in D.C.
Oh, yes, ma'am. That's a great question and great perspective. Like you alluded to, after my helicopter crash, I broke my back and destroyed everything from the waist down. It was actually the traumatic brain injury that was where I was hardest hit, if you will, just because back in those days, back in 2009, we didn't have our head around like we do now, brain science. But the physical injuries were easy to get around. New legs, arms, liver, lungs, medical science, technology, they have that down pretty good. We can bring you back to baseline, but it was the head injury that was very challenging for me. And I went to work on it. I really wanted to figure out how to get myself back to baseline and above, because at that level in spec war, especially the SEAL teams, you need to be at an operational tempo or an operational level that just far exceeds expectations. And I had to be able to do that, especially as a naval officer.
Yes, yes. 14-year military career.
Yes, ma'am. 8 years enlisted and 7 as an officer. Right at 7. So,
wow.
I would say that prepared me just because of the adversity and the challenges that I was faced with. And that really compelled me to get into academia after I was medically retired from the military. And my passion is brain science and helping veterans that have post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury, addiction problems. So I would say my background, and I also worked in D.C. for Secretary Perry in the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. So I had D.C. experience as well. And I learned early on when I walked into D.C. that they really don't care who you are, where you're from, just as long as you are able to navigate the difficult waters of D.C. and get things done, which I was able to do.
Yeah, you were. You mentioned Secretary Perry. Of course, everybody knows him, Governor Rick Perry. He appointed you. You served as special advisor, and that was in the Department of Energy there. And now this is where I always think, I mean, it's very providential. I always think that there are certain people he doesn't call the equip, he equips the called, and that there are certain people that rise up to fit certain needs at certain times. And this is where just all the pieces coming together like this seems kind of stunning to me, because he was asking you to lead the creation of artificial intelligence and technologies office, because we needed to make sure that the United States can stay ahead of Russia and China when we're talking about technology and machine learning technology. And here we're dealing with, we just had the ransomware attack on our biggest gas line, the Colonial Pipeline. There was another, not ransomware, but it was another cyber attack on one of the biggest meatpacking plants in the world. And now everyone's talking about beef prices going up. A headline came out today that China was trying to unsuccessfully hack into New York's subway system. The battlefield is changing the more technologically sophisticated we become. And we need people who understand this in positions where they are able to make decisions that help national security and the protection of Americans. And you, quite literally, this is like your wheelhouse. Talk to us about that.
It is. And people, I really want people to understand that that the cyber attack on the Colonial Pipeline and the JPS meat factory, that those are 9/11 size attacks without the body count. And I don't have a better way to put that. That's how I have to articulate that, because in 2021, and the amount of money that China and Russia are pumping into their artificial intelligence and their machine learning technologies, if America doesn't take a hard look, which in my opinion, the seated administration is not, we cannot afford to fall behind in the AI space. Because make no mistake about it, it's not going to be a bomb, a plane, a rifle further downrange when these wars start. If you have the ability to reach across the pond, if you will, and a click of a button, shut down our infrastructure, hit our grid, shut down the subway, you shut down Wall Street for an hour, the ripple effect, you can't quantify it. It's unmeasurable. And it's a very sensitive but scary topic. And that's one of my biggest campaign platforms. We need to take a hard look at cybersecurity. We need to move in that direction. And I learned that firsthand working in D.C. and seeing America's capabilities. We're there. It just seems like when this administration came in, they went a completely different direction. And it's disheartening, especially as hard as we work under the Trump administration and Secretary Perry to get that started.
Yeah, yeah, and this is, and it you mentioned something important. I mean, it's a scary thing because I think so many people know too little about it. And I've always said that it seems like cybersecurity is kind of treated like the condiment on the buffet, right? It's like it's kind of an afterthought, but that's where everything is moving towards. And we got some people in Congress that I know that they have good intentions, but I think that some of the folks don't quite understand exactly the best way to go about, you know, making sure that like our grid is secured and making sure that our pipelines, that's infrastructure, to talk about infrastructure. But we need more of that. We need more people that have your thinking.
We do. Yeah, I totally agree. Thank you for saying that. It's necessary. It's an absolute necessity. Then we take a hard look at what is happening and what has happened. I mean, we want to be energy dependent. That's energy independent. I mean, that's the best thing we have. We shut down a pipeline right when the administration seat. We have a colonial pipeline attack. I mean, we just got out of a pandemic, and we're not even looking at being medically independent. I mean, what happened? We depended so much on overseas products to make the American public healthy. I mean, we got the virus from them. Hello.
Yeah, we all of our, what is it, our PPE majority came from them, antibiotics, some antivirals, and then to say nothing about like the chips and the rare earth elements, etc. All of this. People can go. We're talking with Morgan Luttrell, who announced today that he is running for Congress, Texas's 8th congressional district. And you can visit his website, morganluttrell.com. And I just, because I think that there, I mean, you just, your background with cybersecurity and as well as serving your country on the battlefront as well. I mean, you have your priorities listed. I mean, for the folks that are wondering, he checks all of the limited government boxes, protecting the Second Amendment, border security, cutting wasteful spending, which is, you know, there's several things that are right there at the center of my heart. But one of the things that I think you really, really get more so than a lot of people, because I know that we live in very, very politically tribal times, is you get the bigger picture, because this isn't really Democrat and Republican anymore, liberal versus conservative. You have members of Congress that are openly advocating for Marxist principles and Marxist economic policy, and even using language to promote it. We are in this, you know, the Marxism versus liberty kind of phase of things now. And you're one of the few people who kind of see around all of the, you know, the political benchmarks and get that bigger picture. Talk to me a little bit about that, because that really, that's how coalitions are formed.
It is. I've seen firsthand what that that looks like in other places in the world. I've been around this world. I've fought in a lot of places. And I again, see firsthand that if we don't create a defensive posture, a strong defensive posture right now, and say no more, we need people in D.C. that have the ability to stand up for what is right and our conservative values and say no more and have a voice and be confident and not be scared, not be frightened. I've had people try to do amazingly bad things to me. So if you're going to throw some harsh language out, you got to have to come at me with something harder than that.
There you go. He's been insulted by better.
Yeah, I've been insulted by better. I've sat in front of OMB before. It was a nightmare. Anyway, so wow. It's a slippery slope that we're on, and I really want the American public to know, hey, look, however you're thinking, you need to really dig into and see the underpinnings of what these people are preaching, because it could scuttle a country. And if we get too far downstream and can't swim, we're done. We're dead.
Yeah. It's a scary time, and a scary time calls for some brave folks. Morgan Luttrell, the website's morganluttrell.com, announces run for Texas's 8th Congressional District. Morgan, I know we'd love to have you back and talk to you more, especially as we get further and further into, you know, the ransomware attacks, the cybersecurity, because these headlines now, I mean, I think the Colonial Pipeline opened up a whole wave of stuff. One company capitulated and, you know, our government sort of stood to the side. And now that's just emboldening all these other people. So now we're hearing all of these other stories now about attempts and whether they're successful or not. So we're really going to need to rely upon your expertise. I know you're running for Congress, but we're going to need to rely on your expertise as well on this.
No, happy to. Look forward to it.
Awesome. Morgan Luttrell, well, congratulations. Say hello to the family for us, and we look forward to talking with you again, Morgan. Thank you. And thanks for your service.
It's the Dana Show.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. So, a paintball drive-by. One of the listeners sent this to me. They call him still Senator Bullworth because that one movie. But this is kind of crazy. A dad took his 10-year-old son on a paintball drive-by. And guess what ended up happening? Nothing good. He ended up getting shot by an actual firearm and then run over by his own dad's car.
Whoa.
Yeah. This is a AP story. Police say that a Florida homeowner believed that his home was under attack during the early morning hours of Sunday, when 26-year-old Michael Williams reportedly drove his 10-year-old son to carry out a drive-by paintball attack on the Opa-locka area home. The son begged to drive to a home where other young people were reportedly gathered. He wanted to fire his paintball gun out the window. Nobody knew whether or not he intended to actually hit the people with the paint or the house itself. So the dad did it. He fired off several rounds, but the homeowner, who is not named, thought his family was under attack and returned fire. Wow. And yeah, that the boy lost his balance. He was outside, it seems like he was outside. They wouldn't specify whether he was inside or outside. And then when he fell over because he lost his balance, that's apparently when the dad accidentally drove him over. Oh my gosh. Like, so many things wrong with this story, including the bad parenting. Stick with us.
That's consistently been the Prime Minister's position, and what our responsibility is, and the responsibility of President Biden, is to act in the interest of the United States. And our view is that putting in place a diplomatic agreement, an agreement where we can prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, where we have returned to the visibility we had before the former president pulled out of that deal, is in our interest.
I'm not quite sure how it is in anyone's best interest for the United States to rejoin the Iran nuclear, not really a deal, because it was never even signed. There was nothing. It's actually, I mean, it's something that should have been, if anything, ratified by Congress, but it wasn't. And furthermore, why would it be in anybody's best interest to enter into any kind of agreement with the nation that is literally financing Hamas, which has been leading the attacks against Israel? Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Subscribe to Chapter and Verse, the newsletter. And don't forget, no apologies on the 1st at 5 p.m. Central, 6 Eastern. We got a lot of stuff for you today. Ooh, later on, at the bottom of the hour, we'll talk to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. He's going to join us, too. Got a lot of stuff to go over. A lot of stuff to discuss. I wanted to play this audio soundbite for you. I was the Psaki. That Psaki soundbite was very just. It stuck out to me. Switching gears, this one from MSNBC, because we've been discussing quite a bit, and I think that this is one of the biggest stories. I think this is one of the biggest stories of all time because of all of the different elements that are involved. You have an absentee press. Well, I don't know if that's the best way to put this. Activist press. Yeah, that's right. Activist press that was not asking the tough questions. In fact, when any of this was brought up, even Robert Redfield, the Vanity Fair piece that came out 11,000 words on all these bombshells on everything. It is damning. Robert Redfield, former CDC director, he told Vanity Fair, and Vanity Fair reported on this in their story that came out today, back in March, and insanely enough, back in March, he received death threats from other scientists because he said that it possibly... this whole thing looks like it was a lab leak, looked like it could have leaked from a lab. And he received death threats for this. Because science, The Hill wrote about this as well. Ex-CDC director Robert Redfield received death threats from fellow scientists after saying, this was last March, that he believed, March 2020, he believed the coronavirus originated in a lab. Well, even being generous, you were talking about gain of function stuff. I mean, they were studying that, correct? I mean, they did have it in the lab. I'm just saying, goodness. But now this is, Vanity Fair, kudos to them, because apparently there were certain parts of the federal government that were very discouraging a full investigation into how all of this started. And then you had all these Fauci emails that came out. And so one of Fauci's first interviews was to MSNBC's Nicole Wallace. And this is pretty much all she asked about those, all she said about those emails. Listen to this ridiculousness.
Well, the true mark of someone is if they look good, even when their personal emails come out. So you pass the test that very few of us would pass. Dr. Anthony Fauci, thank you.
Didn't ask him a single damn thing about his emails. How are you a journalist when you have this guy right in front of you, even out of your own self-interest and competitiveness, and you don't ask him about this?
She's no journalist.
Even if I like someone, if there's a story, I like me more than I like somebody else when it comes to work stuff. If there's something, I'm going to ask you about it. Doesn't even, that's all it is. Yeah, they even look good in your emails. When he wasn't responding to members of Congress, but he would reply to Morgan Fairchild. How does Morgan Fairchild even have his email? She emails him and he's writing right back. Or when he's sending links about his press coverage to other people. 900 pages. There's 900 pages of these emails. Well, Vanity Fair wrote about it. The lab leak theory inside the fight to uncover COVID-19's origins. Who, boy, is this a read? And kudos to them for writing this, because that is something else. But it's true. They said that they had a months-long Vanity Fair investigation in addition to all these emails that are out. Interviews with more than 40 people. They reviewed all these government documents, internal memos, meeting minutes, even more than just all those emails. And it said in one State Department meeting, officials seeking to demand transparency from the Chinese government say they were explicitly told by colleagues not to explore the Wuhan Institute of Virology's gain-of-function research because it would bring unwelcome attention to the U.S. government funding of it. In an internal memo obtained by Vanity Fair, Thomas DiNanno, former acting assistant secretary of the State Department's Bureau of Arms Control, Verification, and Compliance, wrote that staff from two bureaus, his own and the Bureau of International Safety and Nonproliferation, warned leaders within his bureau, quote, not to pursue an investigation into the origin of COVID-19 because it would, quote, open up a can of worms if it continued, end quote. If I have to ask whose side you're on, you're not on the side of the United States. Wow. One Vanity Fair writes that the attendees were floored. Actually, the phrase was, quote, absolutely floored, end quote. They said that someone in government would make an argument that is so nakedly against transparency in light of the unfolding catastrophe was shocking and disturbing. Whew. So They said that in this, and Park apparently had been involved in a 2017, this one, Christopher Park, who is the director of the State Department's biological policy staff, they had a meeting where they were discussing what they could not share with the public. And Park had said not to say anything that would point to the United States' government's own role in the functioning of gain-of-function research. And Vanity Fair apparently got documentation of the meeting. Now, they write that Park in 2017 was involved in lifting a moratorium against funding for gain-of-function research. So he wasn't the only person warning State Department investigators to not dig around, obviously, because he didn't want to be implicated. And as the group continued to probe this lab leak scenario, members were repeatedly advised not to open a Pandora's box. That was a quote. Thomas DiNanno says to Vanity Fair, quote, "It smelled like a cover-up. I wasn't going to be a part of it." Whoo! And then you get Robert Redfield getting death threats. And this is where the Vanity Fair piece gets into this. They said for most of the past year, the lab leak scenario was treated like, you know, it was morally out of bounds, which I think is a great way that they describe it. They write, in late March, former Centers for Disease Control Director Robert Redfield received death threats from fellow scientists after telling CNN that he believed the coronavirus had originated in a lab. Redfield said, quote, "I was threatened and ostracized because I proposed another hypothesis. I expected it from politicians. I didn't expect it from science," end quote. Yeah, well, that just further proves the theory correct. If they're saying that they're going to kill you because you're talking about your theory, that doesn't mean your theory's bunk. It means that people are terrified as to what you might say, so they want to silence you. Wow. I'm speechless. I'm speechless about this. They said there's only three places in the world that are doing this research on these bats. They get into the story of Dr. Richard Ebright. He's a Board of Governors professor of chemistry and chemical biology at Rutgers. And he said from the very start that these reports of this novel bat-related virus outbreak in Wuhan, he said it took him, and this is the quote that he said to Vanity Fair, "a nanosecond or a picosecond to consider a link to the Wuhan Institute of Virology." Only two other labs in the world, in Galveston, Texas, and Chapel Hill, North Carolina, were doing similar research. Quote, "It's not a dozen cities. It's three places," end quote. And then there was the Lancet statement. Peter Daszak, we talked about him yesterday. Vanity Fair says, then came the revelation that the Lancet statement was not only signed, but organized by a zoologist named Peter Daszak. He has repackaged U.S. government grants and allocated them to facilities conducting gain-of-function research, among them the Wuhan Institute of Virology itself. David Asher, now a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, ran the State Department's day-to-day coronavirus inquiry. He said, it soon became clear that there's a huge gain-of-function bureaucracy inside the federal government. China aggressively blocked efforts at all transparent investigation. And, I mean, this is just, good heavens. They said it smelled like a cover-up. Smelled like a cover-up. And so they get into, no one at the State Department apparently had much interest in Wuhan's labs at the start of the pandemic. They were concerned with China's apparent cover-up of the outbreak's severity. Because remember, the government shut down that Hunan market. They ordered all lab samples to be destroyed. They were detaining and disappearing researchers. And they claimed the right to review any scientific research ahead of publication. And Wall Street Journal reported this because they kicked the Wall Street Journal out of the country. Remember that? We had that in the very early days of all this. And then don't forget Li Wenliang. I've written about him. We've talked about him. He was the ophthalmologist in Wuhan, January 2020. He is deceased because of the virus. He was trying to warn everyone that this pneumonia that everyone keeps calling it was a form of SARS. He was warning everyone about the first warnings about this came from Li Wenliang. He was arrested. He was accused of disrupting the social order. That's how Vanity Fair describes it. That's what the communists did. They forced him to write a self-criticism. And he passed away in February. They were covering it up. And one of the things that David Feith, who is with the State Department's East Asia Bureau, had said, he says, quote, you had the Chinese government, the Communist Party government there, coercion and suppression. We were very concerned that they were covering it up, and whether or not the information coming to the World Health Organization was reliable. They were immediately not believing what China was telling them. And that's when Miles Yu, the principal strategist for the State Department, noted that the Institute of Virology there in Wuhan was really, really quiet. He's fluent in Mandarin. He mirrored the website and began compiling a dossier of questions, says Vanity Fair, about its research. He gave that dossier to Pompeo. Pompeo publicly demanded access to the labs after. Now, they say they don't know if Yu's dossier made its way to Trump, but on April 30th, 2020, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence put out an ambiguous statement, the apparent goal of which was to suppress a growing furor around lab leak theory. They said that the intel community concurs with wide scientific consensus that the virus was not man-made or genetically modified, except insiders say that was not happening. Matthew Pottinger, a former deputy national security advisor, said, quote, it was pure panic. Panic. We know nothing. Let's put out the statement, end quote. And then Trump weighed in. Before we go to break, let me tell you this. This is how Vanity Fair, you can tell, hates Trump, but not on this issue. They go, then the bomb thrower in chief weighed in. At a press briefing hours later, Trump just contradicted his own intel officials and said he saw classified information indicating that the virus came out of the Wuhan Institute of Virology. Asked what the evidence was, he goes, I can't tell you that. I'm not allowed to tell you that. He was telling you the truth the whole time, even despite his intelligence officials. Now do you see why so many people were eager to work and abuse FISA authority to try to take him out politically? Because of this. That's why. You have two of the biggest cover-ups in American history that have happened here within the past, 7 years?
Yeah,
boom. We got a lot still. I'm going to put this in with some selected portions in the newsletter tonight. I'm not going to do a deep dive for you tonight because I want you to read this Vanity Fair piece, and I'm going to put some of the choice, I think, excerpts. I want you to read the whole thing, but there's just some bombshells in here. Bombshells.
Follow Dana on Twitter @DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
And I ended up losing my whole thing. Okay, here we go. All right, I found it now. So apparently, big changes are coming to Israel's government, and they're reporting that Netanyahu, it looks like he's out. In fact, the way that it went, he is Israel's longest serving leader. He was ousted as prime minister. Rival parties say they reached a coalition to name Naftali Bennett, who, as I understand, wasn't he kind of a Netanyahu protege? And apparently he was like an ally of Netanyahu's, but then he flipped on him. But now Axios says he's not quite out yet. So don't be too excited. Never get excited about stuff until the ink dries. John Hinckley Jr., the guy who tried to murder Reagan, has rebranded himself as a super creepy singer-songwriter. 66 years old. I'm not even going to tell you anything about it. I think people need to not give this dude media attention.
Ditch the legacy media and unfree press by subscribing to The Dana Show on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Can you just clarify how he sees the stakes of these bills like in Texas? Does he truly see them as an existential threat to democracy?
Well, I would say that first, he believes that the Texas legislation is a part of a concerted attack on our democracy being advanced, as we have seen, not just in Texas, as you well know, but in states across the country on the basis of the same repeatedly disproven lies that led to the assault on our nation's capital on January 6th.
Good heavens, that's Jen Kane's already fed up. We haven't even started the segment, and you're already frustrated.
I know.
Welcome back to the show, DanaLash.com. It's good to be with you all today. It's been a very busy day. And of course, this is one of the things that we've been hearing from the administration. If it's not that there's no border crisis, they think there's a crisis with voting and in terms of keeping, maintaining the integrity of voter rolls and making sure that people who can vote are able to vote and people who are ineligible to vote can't vote. That's the crisis, but not everything that's happening at the border. I'm fascinated by the redefinition of terms. Joining us right now on this issue and others, the Attorney General of the Republic of Texas, Ken Paxton, who joins us. And I have to say, you match your background a little bit. It's all very complimentary. It's good to see you, sir.
I tried to make it help for you, Dana.
Well, we appreciate that effort. We appreciate that effort indeed. One of the big things obviously came out this week. The administration said that they are going to officially end the Trump era Remain in Mexico immigration policy, which that policy really did alleviate a lot of that congestion with attempted illegal entries at the border. Talk to us about now what can Texans and really everybody else, because it's not just a Texas border issue now at this point. It's an everybody issue, because clearly we've seen that it doesn't just stay at the border in Texas and it doesn't just stay in Texas. What's next? How does this end? What's the consequence of this?
So it's pretty sad. The Obama administration did the same thing. It didn't work. The Trump administration was trying to address the problem. And this is one of the policies they came up with, the stay in Mexico. And it actually worked. And what's so frustrating for not just me, for my state, but for Border Patrol, for anybody that's trying to do their job along the border, is that these change in policies are a disaster. They're having just the opposite effect of stopping illegals from coming across the border. They're empowering the cartels in a massive way, because the cartels are charging almost everybody that comes across. I was told in Laredo about $8,000 per person. And then the Border Patrol, who should be stopping drug trafficking and all this other stuff, they're busy taking care of these people. And so the cartels are making billions off of Biden policies. And so this is a pretty sad state of affairs when the Biden administration is benefiting the cartels primarily.
$8,000 per person. It seems like, I keep hearing that the new dope is people. It's not even really drugs anymore. It's people. And that's what the cartels are trafficking in. I mean, those figures sounds about right.
Well, and it's true in McAllen. They were telling me that a minimum, it costs about $4,000 per person to come across, because you have to pay the cartels to get in. You're not getting across this border very easily by yourself. So it was $4,000 to $50,000. So do the numbers. There's, you know, thousands of people coming across the border. They are making hundreds of millions of dollars every month, billions every year. And then you throw in the drug trafficking and the other human trafficking they're doing. It's an amazing business, and I would guess the cartel is pretty grateful to the Biden administration these days.
Oh, I bet he's making them a lot of money. We're talking to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. You know, I hear from a lot of people who are advocates for these measures from the Biden administration that this is the humane thing, to allow people to enter the country. But then I just saw a video again this morning of a 5-year-old who was dropped off by coyotes clutching a teddy bear crying in the desert. And it was caught by like one of these security cameras. Thankfully, Border Patrol was able to get to him in a relatively short period of time. But this is not any different from the other little boy that was found wandering in the desert crying. He had been abandoned by coyotes, or the three little girls, one of which was a baby that could barely walk, that were found abandoned in the desert. A lot of kids that are being brought over and dropped off. How is that humane? How can they justify that?
No, this is not a humane policy. This is just the opposite of that, because every one of these kids, every one of these people that cross the border are being controlled by the cartel. So they may be controlled even after they get into the country. If they don't have the money to pay now, there may be a price later as it being trafficked. So this is not a humane policy. This is just the opposite. If they really cared about these people, they would go to Congress and they'd figure out some other way to do this that would actually benefit the people who say they're trying to benefit. It's just the opposite.
Yeah, exactly. One more question on this issue. The border czar, the Vice President Kamala Harris, hasn't been to the border yet. And she says that, well, the real problem with this stems from what's happening in these other countries. And she, you know, she gets into, you know, the triangle and Colombia and elsewhere, and that it's the instability there and the crime there that's really fueling this. But wouldn't enriching the cartels that are really the bulk of the crime in these countries, they're funding the very thing that they say are destabilizing these areas and sending people north. I mean, do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Oh, absolutely. They are incentivizing cartel activity, because if you're going to get $8,000 per person or whatever you're going to get, you're a cartel member. You want to go find more people and promise them you'll get them across the border for this amount of money. The Biden administration has set up a pure incentive for the cartels. There's no getting around that. This idea that somehow you can go down and fix Colombia or you can go down and fix Guatemala, you know, maybe you can work on it long term, but that doesn't solve the problem now. What solves the problem now is going back to the policies that work. Stay in Mexico. Stop this catch and release stuff. Close the borders, build the wall, get the job done for the American people, and don't harm these immigrants like the Biden administration is doing, and don't empower the cartels.
Yeah, that's a good point. Talking with Texas Attorney General Dan Patrick. So what's happening in, let me just ask you a question about the Texas legislature. Because are we going to get a special session for, and why do we even need a special session in the first place? Shouldn't all the, and I realize this is a big, there were some very conservative pieces of legislation that were passed, but Democrats kind of followed this like Wendy Davis blueprint and decided to just walk out. Although none of this really even had to happen. What happened here and what can people expect? Are we going to get some of these other measures passed?
Well, I hope so. It certainly, the Democrats have used this strategy when I was in the House many years ago to stop redistricting. And I guess their idea is we won't show up and we'll stop it that way. That's not the appropriate way to do it. They're supposed to represent their people. They're supposed to come in and have the debate. And then whoever has the votes wins. And that's the way the system is supposed to work. It's actually not legal for them to walk out. And I hope that we have the opportunity to address these issues in a special session, because election integrity and redistricting and many of the other issues that didn't get done because of this are pretty important to the state of Texas.
Yeah, I know that we were looking at what there's a voting bill. There was also about protecting basically the integrity of female sports. There were a number of things that were still up there on the docket that needed action. I'm glad that constitutional carry was passed. I mean, that's my big thing. I really appreciate that. But I wanted to see some of this other stuff also be passed. Do you think that this is more Democrats and illegal maneuvers to try to cut this stuff off, or and just to be very frank, does some of this come at the feet of Republicans who outnumber them in the legislature and maybe some of the other leadership elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, certainly maybe there should have been a different strategy, but I think primarily this is a national issue that the Biden administration is coaching some of the Democrats in Texas to use. And of course, you saw Biden's comments, you mentioned them already, that, you know, he's criticizing the Texas legislature. So they're working hand in hand to defeat any type of rational election integrity, because they don't want election integrity. They want the ability to commit as much fraud as possible. They've demonstrated that in the past. They claim like you're an idiot for claiming that there's voter fraud. And what I can tell you as a matter of fact, we prosecute it. There is voter fraud, and the highest incidence is in mail-in ballots. So that's why they gravitate towards mail-in ballots, because they know that that's an effective way, because you don't have to show photo ID. No matter what the law is related to mail-in ballots, it's hard to prevent fraud no matter what you do. So they love it.
And it's hard to get it cleaned up. Now, I mean, while we're talking to the Attorney General of Texas, I have someone who's illegally registered to vote at my home address. They voted illegally in the last election at my home address. I got the mail-in ballot. I got all kinds of stuff for this person. And I'm trying to get them removed. So for anybody who says that there's not fraud and there's not illegal registration, that's a lie, because I'm living it. There's like a magical person that lives here and votes.
It's a lie, and you're a bad person for even bringing it up. I mean, you're just either crazy or there's something wrong with you. How can you even talk about this today? It's a legitimate issue that they are trying to almost eliminate our ability to even discuss it. And then, of course, they're trying to pass a federal law that basically allows criminal activity and voting to happen everywhere.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with that. Before I let you go, we're talking to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. I got to ask you about a piece of gossip. So let me just ask you about this. I was reading this Newsweek piece. He's like, great, what is this? I was reading this Newsweek piece where you were talking about, you know, 2022 and certain people in gubernatorial seats and reelection campaigns. And the gossip is that there's, you know, some kind of rift, and that the incumbent, the Governor Greg Abbott, that you wouldn't back him in 2022 reelection campaign. Is there any truth to this gossip, or is this just Newsweek being shady?
It's just Newsweek being shady. The governor and I have to work. He's a client of mine. He and I have worked together on a lot of issues, and I have a lot of respect for his ability to get things done. Nobody agrees on every issue, but I would say this. I think he's done a good job, and I look forward to working with him over the next few years.
There you go. Attorney General Ken Paxton. I know, well, one last thing. I know I saw that because you have a primary challenger as well that's going to be coming up, and we'll be talking about that in the days to come. That's making some new, it's just getting all kinds of interesting in Texas here. But we appreciate your time. Thank you, sir. Good to see you.
All right, have a great day. Thank
you. Of course, take care.
Want a deeper dive into The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana Lash's chapter and verse newsletter by visiting danalash.com and clicking on the subscribe tab. Don't worry, your info is safe with her.
2 weeks ago in committee hearing, he said they did not fund any gain-of-function research. I quoted that specific paper.
Right.
So the very paper that he puts in the email, he says, oh my goodness, we need to read this paper because we looks like we are actually funding gain-of-function research, which is where we juice up these viruses, take them from animals, and infect them into humans. He's admitting that to his underling. He's worried about this in February of last year. But only 2 weeks ago, he tells me, oh, it wasn't gain-of-function research. But in his email, in the subject line, he says, gain-of-function research.
Yeah, he does. Rand Paul was right. He was absolutely right. And to, I mean, really, all the people that were trying to mock him for arguing with Fauci about this, etc. Good heavens. No, he was right. He was absolutely right. Welcome back to the show, danalash.com. I got to tell you, I am amazed at this. I don't know why I shouldn't be, but I'm amazed at this tweet from, it is editor-in-chief of the Global Times in China, and it is a communist-run newspaper. And they tweeted this out. The Tiananmen incident gave Chinese society a political vaccine shot, which has enabled us to be immune to any color revolution. 31 years later, riots emerged and spread in the U.S. They only think of exporting it, but forget to prepare vaccine for themselves. They're literally cheering and celebrating their massacre of, I think the body count is anywhere from 300 to 7,000. Nobody knows. And they said most people in China under the age of 25 don't even know what the Tiananmen Square massacre is. It's not an incident. It's a massacre. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That just shows you how the media can influence what people believe is true.
Yeah, their propagandist media makes it possible. Their media makes it possible. Just like we have a media here that made it possible for over a year bureaucrats to deny not just the origin, but also a number of other issues related to the virus that would have been helpful for the public to know, including origin, intent. Instead of shaming people for not wearing masks publicly, people were attacked, they were arrested, they were fined. I mean, it freedoms were really removed because of that. And in the entire time, you have these bureaucrats that are telling the government to make rules based upon their expert medical recommendations are saying that, well, actually, the masks don't work. I mean, you don't really need to wear them. The virus particles can pass through anyway. I mean, verbatim, they can pass through anyway. And they were telling politicians to make regulations on the opposite of that. People were spending time in, they had jail time. They had fines for this.
Businesses died.
Yeah, businesses died. Very interesting. The parallels between the way our media handled objectively seeking truth and the way communist China's propaganda outfits handle the Tiananmen Square massacre or Hong Kong or the imprisonment of Uyghurs in the Xinjiang province. Pretty unbelievable. Yeah.
Imagine if you're China and you're looking at the history of communism and how it was destroyed by the world, you know, through war. But they're like, how can we win a war against the world without firing one shot? And it's these viruses. This is China's intentionally doing this. We have so much evidence to prove that China's doing this intentionally. Yet our own leadership in our own country right now in this administration is running cover for China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, our news outlets were borrowing a lot of the language of their news outlets. Our news outlets were copying to the argument that identifying the origin of the virus was racist, just as the way that this exact this exact public, this propaganda outfit masquerading as an independent media entity was doing. I'm going to talk about this more. I think we got a new piece I'll have probably right tomorrow. In the meantime, today in stupidity.
If you ever wonder why we believe government is nothing to lean on or look to for answers, I give you this.
If we want to reduce violent crime, if we want to reduce the number of people in our jails, the answer is to stop building more of them. The answer is to make sure that we actually build more hospitals, we pay organizers, we get people mental health care and overall health care, employment, etc.
Okay. Yeah. The existence of jails doesn't come before crime. Like, crime happened, which is why we have jails.
Yeah, you don't build it and then they come. Yeah. That's not how that works. Good heavens. Tomorrow's Friday, folks. We made it through the week. DanaLash.com. Subscribe to the newsletter, chapter and verse. No apologies on the first, 5 p.m. Central, 6 Eastern. God bless. Back with you tomorrow.